So you've got a sermon outline on the inside of your new sheet, and as the title suggests, we're doing a topical sermon today on the doctrine of rest. And because it's a holiday topic, I thought we'll have a question time at the end. So if there's anything I don't cover or any things you want to talk about, just save it for then and I'll see what I can do. And so because we're doing a topical sermon today, even though we read all the Ten Commandments, we're really just interested in one today, and that is honour the Sabbath, commandment number 4. And the interesting thing about the Sabbath for Christians is that before the book of Acts ends, all right, before this talking about the early church, before the book of Acts ends, the church had stopped meeting on the Sabbath, on the Saturday, and they had chosen the Lord's Day, which is Sunday, as their weekly day of rest. And so when Christians talk about rest and the Sabbath, what we basically mean is to rest one day in seven. Okay, so that's what we're talking about today, the commandment to rest one day in seven. But the question we need to ask up front is, why this command to rest? I mean, all the other commandments in God's top 10, they kind of make sense. Have no other God before me. You know, do not misuse my name. Do not murder. Do not steal. We can expect those things to hit God's top 10 list. But why does rest make it in? Well, the first reason is that humans are actually designed for rest. Mark chapter 2, Jesus says the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Now, what he's getting at is that God has set aside a day of rest each and every week for our benefit as humans. And the interesting thing is that when humans stray from this pattern, things start to fall apart. So back in the French Revolution, authorities tried to introduce a 10-day week. They want to move away from this whole religious idea of the 7-day week, and they introduced a 10-day week. And what actually happened was the workers struggled. They were exhausted, and they demanded that it change back only after a couple of years. Furthermore, studies today have shown that divorce rates are noticeably higher among shift workers or fly-in, fly-out workers. Right, people who don't have that 7-day routine. See, the reason God commands rest is because he's specifically designed us to need it. But here's the thing. When I talk about rest, there are some people that are going to be here that are going to be squirming in their seats already because you know you don't take a full day of rest every week. And you know that you're breaking commandment number 4 every week. Whether it's checking work emails or studying for our next exam or just preparing for Monday, there are people at this church who will always do work on their day off. And if that is you, please know this sermon is not about you. Well, I should say it's not only about you. It's about everyone. Because what I realized this week is that you and I can actually be taking a day off from our regular work every week, yet still not be resting. You see, true rest, according to the Bible, is rest for the soul. And that's what we want to talk about for you today. Rest for the soul. If our soul is not completely at rest in the gospel, and that's everyone, by the way, because we haven't reached perfection yet, all right? That'll happen when Jesus returns or when we go to heaven. Because we haven't reached perfection yet, each and every one of us does not have true rest of our soul in the gospel. And because of that, we are unable to rest perfectly, even if we're not doing any work on our day off. So what I want to look at today is how to get that rest for our soul so that we can actually enjoy a day of rest each week. So I'm going to say that again. Today's sermon is about how to get true rest for our soul as best as we can in this life so that when our day off comes, we can actually enjoy that kind of rest. And I've got 3 points to help us do that today, as your sermon outline suggests. So we're going to begin by peeling back the curtain and seeing why it is our soul finds it so hard to rest. And so the reason we don't rest, as I've said there, is because of our identity. Our souls are too busy working at our identity to actually find rest. And then the last 2 points are going to be looking at ways to rectify this problem. So firstly, it is by not hiding from our identity, and secondly, by not trying to achieve our identity. So 3 points, and if we can unpack these 3 very simple points, it'll give us the tools necessary to experience real rest in this life. And is that not something we all want? We want to be able to rest, right? So let's have a look at how, firstly, how we don't rest because of our identity, followed by how we fix it, which is we must stop hiding from our identity and we must stop trying to achieve our identity. And the reason we find ourselves working at our identity is in part because of how work has been corrupted. So we're looking at rest, work, okay? And by corrupted, I think what I mean is that people no longer work the way the Bible tells us to work. We're not working the way the Bible tells us to work. Now, let me explain what I mean. Work, to begin with, is a good thing. So I hope you understand. Work is not part of punishment for the fall. Work was in the garden before Adam and Eve sinned. All right? So work was actually part of how Adam and Eve enjoyed paradise. But if we look closely at Genesis chapter 2, we see that the work God gave Adam and Eve to do was to look after his creation. Okay, that's what the work is. We're here to look after God's creation, and God's creation has two main elements to it. It has the environment and it has people. So firstly, Genesis 2 tells us that Christians should be among the most environmentally conscious people on the planet. Why? Because God put us here to care for his planet, not exploit it. Now, sadly, we don't have time to cover environmentalism in detail today. I have in previous sermons. You can go look them up. But one thing I would say is that Christians should be mindful of the environment in all our decision-making. All right? See, if all the experts are saying that things like global warming or renewables or waste management are actual serious issues today, then should Christians not be taking them seriously in our decision-making? So that's aspect number one to looking after God's creation, looking after the environment. The second way we look after God's creation is by looking after people, providing for God's creatures. What I mean by that is this. You see, before our food arrives on our plate, this is just an example. We'll look at the example of food. That's how we look after ourselves. Before our food arrives on our plate, it has been grown or raised by farmers. It's been packaged by factory workers. It's been shipped to the shops by truck drivers. It's been put on the shelves by night fill people, and it's been sold by the checkout people. See, there's all these people involved in that big long line to make us be able to put food on our plate. And what I'm getting at is this is how God uses our work to look after our community. Now, there is such a thing as bad work. I need to mention that. Things like prostitution or drug dealing or pornography, they actually damage society. All right. So there is such a thing as bad work. But leaving bad work aside, what I want to say is all work is good work, is important, except for the bad work, is important for looking after the community. And God uses our work to do that. Now, here's the thing that's been corrupted, okay? In recent years, work has stopped being a means to an end and has actually become an end in itself. That's how work has been corrupted. What do I mean? You see, according to Genesis 2, we work to accomplish another goal, all right? Our work is a means to an end. Whether it's being putting food on our plate or providing for our family or looking after the environment or caring for those in our community. But what has happened, though, and this has really been turned up to 11 in recent decades, is that our work has now become our identity. Our work has become an end in itself. What do I mean? I mean, people will say, oh, look, if only I'm successful in my job, then I'm worth it. If only my colleagues see me as competent or dependable, then I know I'm worth it. If only I'm successful in my job and get that promotion, then I'm worth it. If only I can run a small business well, then I'll know that I'm worth it. Now notice, all these statements mean that work is no longer a means to an end, it is an end in itself. Our work has become the currency of our self-esteem. And this is why we in the West find it so difficult to rest, even when we're not officially working. It's because we've created a work underneath our work. We've created a work underneath our vocation. And so even though we might be taking a way off from a day off from our vocation every week, we still may not be resting. Why? Because of the work underneath our vocation, and it's never done. If we idolize our work and make it the currency of our self-esteem, then we will never rest in life. In fact, if we make anything on this earth the currency of our self-esteem, we can never rest. Right? If we make money the currency of our self-esteem, if we make popularity our idol, if we make clothes or marriage or education or kids the thing that makes us feel good about ourselves, then we will always be working to make ourselves feel good about ourselves. See, worshipping an idol, now you know what an idol is, remember? It's turning a good thing into an ultimate thing. Worshipping an idol, it's not just breaking commandment number two. It is actually the saddest, most exhaustive existence there is. The only way to free ourselves from this bondage and find true rest is to realize that rest is a principle before it is a day. Let me say that again. Rest is a principle before it is a day. Okay? And so if we want to enjoy a day of rest a week, then we need to understand the principle behind rest. And that is rest for our soul. And the two main reasons humans don't enjoy rest for the soul are our two next points. So the first reason is we're actually hiding from our identity. One of the reasons Christians don't enjoy rest is because we're busy working so hard at hiding. And we hide from two things. We hide from our demons and we hide from our sin. Now, what do I mean by demons? I mean our emotional baggage, okay? So I know a Christian gentleman who, when his eldest got married, he had a bit of a breakdown. And the reason he had a breakdown was because he realized he had missed his kid's childhood. And the reason he'd missed his kid's childhood, and he told me this, he confessed it to me, is because he had spent the last 20 years purposefully making himself busy. And the reason he purposefully made himself busy was because he knew that if he stopped, his mind would automatically start thinking about that serious emotional issue that he'd never properly dealt with. Now, friends, there may be some people here today who are incapable of rest because you are working so hard at hiding from your emotional issues. Now, here's the thing about being a human. We all have emotional baggage, every single one of us. It is part and parcel of growing up in a fallen world. Now, some of us have worse emotional baggage than others. If you have real serious emotional baggage, it could be from trauma. Like, you know what trauma is? Trauma is one of those things that our mind is not actually designed to cope with. So things like war, things like abuse, things like if you witness an accident or bullying. They're the kind of things that come from trauma. You might have a trauma in your life. You might just have run-of-the-mill emotional issues that come from being raised by imperfect parents in an imperfect world. But here's the thing, if we have serious emotional baggage, please do not labor under the lie that we can deal with that emotional baggage ourselves. Right? Just like the only way to properly heal from a broken bone is to go and see a medical professional, so too the only way to deal with serious emotional baggage is to see an emotional professional, a counselor. Because here's the thing, if we are just pushing our emotional baggage down and ignoring it, we will never find true rest. Second thing we hide from is our sin. The reason many Christians today cannot really rest is because we're yet to be convicted of our sin. Now, what do I mean by convicted of sin? It's a legal term, conviction. All right. If we're charged with sin, that means, well, maybe we're guilty, maybe we're innocent. We don't know yet. But when we're convicted, the verdict is in, isn't it? The jury's in. We are guilty. Now, here's the thing. As Christians, we know that. We know that we have to admit our sin. Most of us here have accepted Jesus' death for the forgiveness of our sins. But as I said, salvation does not make our hearts perfect. We haven't reached perfection yet. And what that means is that even the Christian heart will often be tempted to try and convince itself that it's not that bad. Even the Christian heart tries to hide our sin. Now, if you're not convinced that this applies to you, then we need to ask ourselves this. How do we react when someone calls us out on our sin? Like, imagine you've got a close Christian friend or maybe a pastor, right, that says, actually, that thing you're doing there, it's not what the Bible tells us we should be doing. Now, how do you react when someone says that to you? I'm sure they'll do it much more gently than I would, but imagine even if they do it gently, how do you react? Do you get offensive? Do you get on the defensive straight away? No, I've got a reason for that. Maybe you go on the offense and start pointing out all their sin to make yourself feel better. Right? Do you lash out by saying, how dare you judge me? Or how can you punish me like this? Right? Does your world come collapsing down around you? Or are you able to say, you know what? You might have something there. You might be right. In fact, I've got a whole bunch of sin. Now, you know what the difference is? One of those is you're trying to hide your sin. The other is you're not trying to hide it. The human heart will always be tempted to try and hide our sin, whether it be from ourselves or from others or from God. And when we're trying to hide our sin, we will never find true rest because there's always work going on, isn't there? Because we're always sinning. Now, the only way to stop hiding our sin and feel better, and you're not going to like this, the only way to feel better is to first make ourselves feel much, much worse. So it's like when I got appendicitis when I was age 7, I think. I was in tremendous pain and the doctor said, look, we can fix you, but I need to cut you open and remove a part of your body and then stitch you back up. And I said to the doctor, won't cutting me open make me feel worse? And the doctor says, yes, but then you will feel better. Right? The only way to stop ourselves from having to hide our sin is to first make ourselves feel much, much worse about our sin. And we can do this, the way we do this is by stepping back and recognizing just how wicked we actually are. Now, there are two ways to do this. First is by looking at our sin. And this is why I think ex-criminals and people like ex-porn stars often get grace way more than the average good Christian. It's because they actually realize how bad their sin is. But there's a better way. The better way to make ourselves feel worse about our sin is not by focusing on our sin, it's by focusing on what it cost to be forgiven for that sin. And what it cost was the death of an immortal being. Have you ever thought about that? The only way to actually atone for our sin was the death of an immortal being. That's how sinful and wicked we are. Now, here's the thing. When that sinks in, and when we feel really, really bad, and that'll be the moment that we realize our sin required the death of an immortal being, the moment that really sinks in is the moment that we will actually start to feel better because we realize the death of that immortal being has taken our sin away completely. And friends, if we can hold those two elements of the gospel together, all right, I am so sinful that nothing short of the death of an immortal being could atone for my sin, but the death of that immortal being, Jesus on the cross, is what has taken my sin away completely. That's the moment we find real rest. Rest for our soul. As the old hymn says, well may the accuser roar of sins that I have done. I know them all and thousands more. Jehovah knoweth none. That's rest. But that's only the first thing that keeps Christians from rest. What we do wrong. The second thing is what we do right. What we do right is also what keeps us from rest. As I mentioned back in point one, when we idolize something, we make that thing the currency of our self-esteem, our identity. And what that means is We need to earn that currency. We need to achieve that identity. It's similar to, like, it's a very oppressive way to live, but it's very similar to what the movie Saving Private Ryan was about. So for those who haven't seen it, Saving Private Ryan has Tom Hanks. He plays Captain Miller, and his platoon is given the job from going and retrieving Private James Ryan from the front line and bringing him home because Ryan's three brothers have just been killed in action in the last couple of days. Pretty much the whole platoon dies during that mission, spoiler alert, but if you haven't seen it yet. Now, here's the thing. As Tom Hanks's character is dying in Private Ryan's arms, he says to him, James, earn this. Earn it. And the movie closes with an old Private Ryan standing over Captain Miller's war grave. And he turns to his wife and he says, am I worthy of their sacrifice? Now, friends, when we idolize something in this world, we can never enjoy rest. Why? Because like Private Ryan, we have to spend our whole life trying to earn it. He had to spend his whole life earning their sacrifice. And that's the same for us. Like if we idolize our looks, we have to spend thousands on makeup or clothes or surgery to keep looking good. If we idolize our money, then we have to spend sacrifice time or relationships or perhaps even our morality to get more of it. And if we idolize work, then we have to sacrifice family or rest to appease that God. But here's the thing. Do you know what's even sadder about idolizing work is religion? Did you know that every single world religion demands that we sacrifice for God? We sacrifice our Sunday mornings. We sacrifice our money. We sacrifice our religious deeds. Every single world religion says we need to sacrifice for God. Except one. See, biblical Christianity says we don't actually have to earn it like Private Ryan. We don't have to achieve our ticket to heaven. Biblical Christianity says the opposite. You see, for the Christian, our identity is not achieved, it's received. As our regulars will know, the moment at which God took all our sin and put it on Jesus, he also took all of Jesus' righteousness and put it on us. So what that means is that when God looks at a Christian now, one of his children, he doesn't see a poor, ugly wretch. He sees Jesus' perfect righteousness. That's our identity in Christ. This is actually what King David is getting at in Psalm 3. Psalm 3 is talking about when David had thousands upon thousands of his own countrymen chasing him during the revolt of Absalom, his son. And he's lying down at night. And he says this. This is Psalm 3, verse 3. But you, O Lord, are a shield about me, my glory and the lifter of my head. Psalm 3, verse 3 says God is his glory. What does that mean? It means David is saying, I am beautiful, I am intelligent, I am successful, I am approved of by God. Friends, what is our glory? Is it our work? Our looks? Our possessions? Is it our clothes? Our marriage? Our kids? Because if it is, that's not rest. That is a lifetime of agonizing work, just like Private Ryan. Right? Rest comes from knowing our glory, our identity is received. Just like David knew. Two verses later, all right, remember he's lying down about to go to sleep at night. And he, even though there are thousands of people hunting him and wanting to kill him, he says this just two verses later. Psalm 3, verse 5, I lay down and slept, I woke again, the Lord sustained me. That's rest. By making God our glory. So if that's the answer, How do we do it? How do we try and find true rest? Well, the thing I've come to realize, and this is just through personal experience over the last couple of years, is it is next to impossible. Sorry to break it to you. It's actually next to impossible to actually convince our heart that we don't have to achieve our identity. It's impossible to tell our heart that those earthly things that we idolize are not actually going to give us what we want, and that Jesus is the only one that can do it. It's next to impossible. So what we need, and this is our application for today, what we need is the prayer of faith. Now, if you were here a couple of weeks ago, you would have heard us preach on what is faith. And faith, as we learn, it's not just trust, it's not just belief. Faith is coming to the end of ourself and placing ourselves completely at the trust of another, completely in the hands of another. And so the prayer of faith says, Lord, I cannot do this myself. I cannot actually convince my heart to treasure you above my earthly treasures. I'm at the end of myself on this. So over to you. Please transform my heart through your Spirit. Please help me cease seeing my identity as something I have to achieve and rather rest in the identity that I have received in Christ. Now, the way the Spirit will do that, this is where we come in, is through continuing to preach the gospel to ourselves. All right, it is the prayer of faith, and then we do what God tells us to do, which is continue to preach the gospel of grace to ourselves. But as we do that, and as the Spirit does His work in our hearts, we will be able to experience true rest. Not rest from our work only, but rest from trying to hide our sin and rest from trying to achieve our identity. And when that happens, as another old hymn says, we can cast our deadly doing down at Jesus' feet and stand in Him alone, gloriously complete. All right. Cast your deadly doing down at Jesus' feet, stand in Him alone, gloriously complete. I'll have a short time for questions. Mark's jumped straight in. Go, Mark. He's way better than me. Go. He became, sorry? Look, I've never heard that before, but it sounds right. So, I do want to say that Jesus is the, like, all, everything has their yes in Jesus. And so the principle in biblical theology is Jesus is the temple. Jesus is the worship. Jesus is the worshiper. And we can also say, I think, although I must admit I've never heard it before myself, but we can say that Jesus is the Sabbath because He is the rest. All right? Come to me, all who labor and are heavily laden, and I will give you rest. And so, like, the way I heard it was they chose the Lord's Day to honor the resurrection. But I'm very happy with what you just said as well. Like, I must admit, I haven't thought about it, but I don't have any, many objections. You don't have any, objections to that. Yeah, but good question. And it's a great way to think about rest. Yeah. Any other questions? Yes, Sam. Yeah, good question. So Sam is talking about, so if someone does pull us up on our sin, do we actually physically lash out and say, how dare you, you wicked, sinful person, how dare you judge me? Or is that where our mind initially goes to, but we hold ourselves, like we show self control, self-restraint. Is there a difference? There is a difference, but in the end, that difference makes no difference. What I mean is, we need to show self-control. We shouldn't lash out. But here's the thing, we're still not resting if we're doing it even in our mind. So real rest comes from being able to say, like that first hymn I said, well may the accuser roar of sins that I have done. Right? Someone can accuse me of any sin. Am I able to actually rest and say, you know what, even if you're wrong, I've got 1,000 other sins that you can take me to the cleaners on. Right? I know I'm sinful. And even if you are wrong on this one, I'm not going to attack you about it because I'm full of sin. But what I am going to do is I'm going to stop and I'm going to think about it and see if you're right, because I do want to get better. I do want to be able to be more godly and more Christ-like. And so I'm going to stop and I'm going to automatically, my automatic first response is not go on the defensive or even go on the offensive. My first port of call is to stop and say, they might be onto something here, because I know I'm sinful. Now that's rest. That's resting in the fact that we're sinful rather than trying to hide our sin. So there is a difference in how we respond to others, but there's no difference in our mind. We need to be able to get to the point where we can say, I know of them and thousands more, but Jehovah knoweth none. Jehovah knoweth none. Good question. Another one. James. Okay, so James is asking, well, our next day off comes, which is, well, we're in the middle of it for most of us, except for James and I. This is our day of rest generally, and James is asking, what can we do practically to actually enjoy rest? I think number one is enjoy God. All right, real rest comes from enjoying God as our ultimate treasure. So what we're doing right here and right now is great. Make sure that church is your number one priority on your day off. Real rest is resting in the Lord. I think second, make sure you are not, you know, identify what that work under your work is. And pray hard. Spend some of the time on your day off praying, Lord, please help me rest from this work. I don't want to have to prove my identity through my looks or through my work or through my abilities or through my education or whatever it might be. Spend a half hour just praying that prayer, right? That's our application for the day. Say, God, I have come to the end of myself. I cannot actually change my heart. Then do your best to just enjoy your time off. And that might mean, like, I would rather sit around doing nothing, but other people like going mountain bike riding on their day off. Each to their own. I don't mind. Spend time with family. Just make sure you are not actually working in your heart. Make sure you're resting in your heart. So I think that'd be a couple of, there's four practical things you can do. Good question. Got time for one or two more? Yes, John. Yeah, good question, good question. So what if you have a job that means you have to work on Sunday? And so that's what I was trying to sort of hint at the beginning, is for Christians, we don't actually honour the Sabbath. Right? The Sabbath is Saturday. That's what it actually is. If anyone ever says, what is your Sabbath? You say, well, it's Saturday. That's where the word Saturday comes from, sabbaton, Sabbath. Because the early Christians changed that to the Lord's Day, we moved away from commandment number 4, and we now actually rest one day in 7. So what I would say is the principle is pick a day out of the 7 days that you of the week and rest on that day. So for me, my day off is Friday. I try very hard to not do any work on Friday, but I'm still working at, you know, actually resting. Like, my heart is as far from perfection as yours is, so there are things that I need to work on and things I've been praying very hard about this week. This sermon has been real convicting for me to pray that prayer. I'm at the end of myself, Lord. But you got to pick a day. So what's your day off? Wednesday. So, sorry? Tuesday. James's day off is Tuesday. What's tomorrow's day off? Wednesday. Mine is Friday. Yeah, pick a day. Logan. Very good question, very good question. So what if the things you're doing on your day off others see as work? So if someone's going mountain bike riding on their day off, it's like, count me out, that's work for me. But it might not be for you. So I would say if it is something that you enjoy doing, but it's not something that you find your identity in, okay? So I think it is very important for all Christians to take a day off from their regular work week, okay? Because it's very easy for us to actually start to find our identity in our vocation. If you find your identity in being, you could choose anything, but that's what I want to say is make sure your day off, you're doing something that you're not actually working underneath the work. And so, yes, you can be doing things that others might construe as work, as long as you are not using that to try and earn your identity, achieve your identity. Yeah. All right, I think that's about all time we have for. Please come and ask me other questions if you have any afterwards. I'll hand it back to you. Thanks, James.